And I used to get in trouble a lot at school and have to stay after school, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, in eighth grade is when I had my first drink. And I didn't know what alcoholism was. My parents are not alcoholic. My mom's dad was alcoholic, but I never met him because he died when my mom was 15. He died from delirium tremens. That is the primary cause of death on his death certificate. And I didn't know him. So, and then they were from North Carolina, and I was raised in Iowa, so I didn't know any of these people. So anyway, I had my first drink in eighth grade. I had two eighth grade boys over and an eighth grade girl over. My parents had gone away for their anniversary, which was all, oh, my sobriety date's May 29th, 2004. My parents' anniversary was May 29th also, so the first day I drank happens to be the same date as my sobriety date, which happened, I think, 14 years later. So it's kind of cool. But anyway, the parents had gone away. I was supposed to be in charge of my little brothers, and they had had a party, and there were crates of liquor in the basement. And so I got the Jose Cuervo that hadn't been opened yet, and I popped it open, and I started drinking out of the bottle because why not? And we started passing that bottle around. And I just, at the time, I just knew I wanted to do something kind of bad, and I kind of wanted to drink, and I just wanted to be a teenager, you know? And I didn't know what alcohol was going to do for me that night, and I started to pass that bottle around, and pretty soon, all that kind of self-centered angst and self-consumption and fear, I was, like, relieved from it. And then I wanted more booze, and the bottle kept going around. And then I started kind of laughing and feeling warm. And then I remember engaging in some inappropriate behavior for an eighth grader. And then I, then the next thought I had was, you know what? These boys are going to drink all my booze. And this is my house and my alcohol. And I went and locked myself in the guest bedroom and I drank the rest of it. And then it was 4 a.m. and my parents were home. And I was upstairs and I had been in the basement and my friends were gone. And I don't know what happened. I woke up with some pool of liquid. I don't know what that was. And I just knew that I was nervous if I was in trouble. And I had gotten away with it, and that's all I cared about. I didn't care about the fact that I didn't remember part of the night, that I don't know what happened to my friends, where my brothers were. You know, I just was like, okay. And I really liked that experience, and I couldn't wait to do it again. And I didn't start drinking every day in eighth grade. And I was in a lot of sports. I was a good student. You know, I tried to keep up this image. I was in this tiny town in Iowa, you know, and my dad was somebody in the community, and I was trying to be the good girl, and, you know, I started drinking on the weekends at the parties, and I would go find the bikers that had the whiskey in their saddlebags and because the keg beer took forever, and I was like, ugh, I had a large capacity for beer at an early age, and so I'd go find the whiskey, and then I'd go get the beer after I had enough whiskey, and then, you know, I just started getting a reputation I didn't want at a young age. You know, I got pregnant at 15 in a blackout. I got pregnant at 19 in a blackout. And I just stopped doing what gets you pregnant. I can't look at my drinking. I'm like, this is a problem. I had a lot of interactions with the police, but I was never arrested. And I don't think that happened to me today. I think I was a young little blonde girl in Iowa. You know, my friends, my two guy friends went to jail, and my mom picked me up at the cop shop, and my 19 years old, I blew whatever into the breathalyzer, and the guy knew my dad, the sheriff, giving me the test, and took my beer and left, and I got pulled over when I was working in New York, and I don't know, I just didn't look at him, and I told him I was lost. I don't know, I was drunk. So anyway, I graduated from high school with honors, went to the University of Iowa, and at that point in time, my parents had been divorced. My mom is saying things to me like, you're a budding alcoholic, because I started drinking pretty much on a daily basis at 16, right around the time I got my driver's license and got my car. So I was like, Miss Good Girl, good student, sports, athletics, choir, anything you can think of, I was in. And then by night, I was at my way too older boyfriend's apartment / local drug dealer. And I was drinking all night. They were doing a whole lot of other stuff. But, you know, I just drank. And then I'd go to school. I'd come home at 7 a.m. and get ready and go to school. And that's kind of how I did my last 2 years of high school. So my mom is obviously noticing this. And she is saying, you know, you're a budding alcoholic, you're a budding alcoholic. And I was like, don't talk to me. Do you see my grades? I'm going to university. Leave me alone. And that's the podium version of how I spoke to my mother. I did not. I was really rude and disrespectful. And I went to the university, and I went from this straight-A student to three Ds and an F my first semester because I didn't attend class or learn anything. And I ended up switching majors and getting by the skin of my teeth. And at 19, I got really, really depressed, and I couldn't get out of bed. And so I went to see a psychologist because I knew something was wrong with me. I just didn't realize it was alcoholism. And the psychologist didn't ask me how much I drank, and I didn't volunteer that information because at that time it was nowhere, not even a thought. And, you know, he just told me I was in a sophomore slump, and I said, okay, and I left. And I was always seeking a spiritual answer from the time I started drinking. You know, I learned how to do transcendental meditation at 15. When I was in, I became a vegetarian. When I was in college, I was going to a lot of churches. I was rubbing olive oil on the walls and speaking in tongues and drinking vodka at the same time. Excuse me. And, you know, I was just trying to do something to change the way I felt. And I graduated from college, and I knew that Iowa had become the problem. It was apparent, and it was cold, and I'm out of here. And I got in my Ford Tempo in 1998 and drove to San Diego. And my parents weren't like, please don't leave. You know, they were like, don't let the door hit you. I didn't have a cell phone. They didn't care. I mean, they cared, but they were just like, goodbye. And I moved out here and had a series of jobs. And, you know, instead of like coming to in a somewhere on the streets of Iowa, I came to with the Pacific Ocean going over me. And I remember when I first went to the beach to kind of look at the stars in a drunken stupor. The ocean was really far away, and then the tide came in, and I'm glad I woke up when that happened. But you know what? I went back in and drank more that night, because if I'm upright and I'm mobile and I'm already drinking, I'm going to drink some more, especially if someone else is paying for it. And so I ended up going to more schooling out here in San Diego, because I thought, you know, I really need to get a career going. I need to do something. And I went and got this career, and then I moved to Orange County from San Diego. And that was the beginning of the end of my drinking. And I had already started isolating a lot and drinking alone a lot, but I was still going out sometimes. And at that point, it turned, and I only drank alone, and I only drank at home, and I drank vodka every night, and I drank on the floor, because I knew by that point in time it was dangerous for me to drink. Because once I put alcohol into my body just wants another one and another one, and I don't stop. And I cannot recall a time except one time where I controlled my drinking, and I was not enjoying it. I had had about four drinks before the appetizers were done, and my friend's parents were looking at me weird, and it was 11 in the morning. And so I paused, and I thought, they're going to think I'm an alcoholic. And that was years before I got sober, and I just didn't drink through the rest of the meal because they were looking at me funny. And then as soon as I got home, I drank more. And then, anyway, so I just never drank normally is my point. And so I started drinking on the floor at home because my theory was you can't fall if you're already there. And because I was I was not safe. And then I had I guess it's a moment of clarity. I mean, a lot of bad stuff happened to me that I shared with my sponsor in my four step, but I don't know why this made me see the light when this happened, but I went out with my friend. She asked me to go with her to Hollywood to meet some guy. I don't know. And I agreed to go. I thought, you know what? I haven't been around people in a while. I should go be around people. And I went to Hollywood, and I drank everything around me. Then I remember the house lights came on wherever we were, and I was nervous because I wasn't done drinking. And I said, three shots of vodka. Let's all do a shot of vodka. And they didn't do it, so I drank theirs, and then we were in their nice fancy car on the 101 up by wherever, and I just start puking all over their nice car and all over the freeway and all over them, and which honestly was not abnormal for me, but just other people were around. And the thought came upon me, nobody else is puking in this car but you. And there were four other people in there. And I don't know why. I mean, I did so much other stuff, but that night I saw my drinking for the first time, and I thought, you know, I might want to look at this. And so that's when I had my Chapter 3 experiment where I tried to control and enjoy it. My first experiment was to try and have a Diet Coke between my martinis. Because I thought, I'm just thirsty. California's a desert climate. I'm just really thirsty. And so I never had a Diet Coke is how that turned out, because I had a martini first. Then the second thing I did, and I'm 27 years old when this happens, I try not to drink Monday through Wednesday. That was the big life goal. And I can't get past a Monday night without drinking. And I'm 27, and I feel young, and that's just the physical drinking part. Inside, I'm lonely, I'm depressed, I'm thinking about suicide on a regular basis. I feel like I have nothing. It's just a dark, I have a job, that's it, and I hate it, you know? And I'm getting talked to at work about how I smell and slamming doors and cussing at the top of my lungs in a business environment. And I was not nice because I didn't drink at work. So every day I'm detoxing at work and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. And so I didn't act how you're supposed to act at a job. And so I drove home one last night on May 28th in a blackout. I just remember getting in the driveway and going, oh, I made it. And I was drunk. And I came to the next day, which was Saturday, May 29th, 2004, and I thought, I can't live this way anymore. And I had met my Aunt Donna about a year before. She lives in Hawaii. She lived in Kauai for a while, too, so welcome to our Hawaii visitor. And she's sober 31 years now. She was sober 20 at the time. And one of my bosses was sober, and his secretary had broken his anonymity to me, and she was sober at work. So I was kind of surrounded by people, and I was like, I don't know why people are telling me this stuff. And so I came to that day, and I thought, I can't live this way anymore. It wasn't, I'm going to AA. It wasn't, I'm getting sober or stopping drinking. I just thought, I want to blow my brains out every day, and I can't stop drinking, you know, at that point. And I ended up going to the Lakewood Public Library, and I knew I needed to stay busy, because on Saturday morning I started drinking. You know, I didn't work on Saturday, so I drank right away in the morning, and I knew I had to get out of the house. And so I went to the library, and I was just going to get a biography or something, and I found myself standing in the aisle on alcoholism. And I think it was like in the back corner of the library, and I didn't mean to be standing there. I consider it the grace of God, but I got all these different books, and like alcohol abuse and alcohol dependency, the AA story, and there was just a stack of books, and I looked like a train wreck. I was probably 30 pounds heavier than I am right now. I was very bloated from all that drinking, and I went and checked those books out, and I probably read maybe for 10 seconds, and I was fitting all the categories, and I was freaking out. I'm like, oh, I might be alcoholic. I got to get out of here. And I drove to work, even though we were closed, and I tried to work for a little bit. I just needed to stay busy, and I was getting really, like, detoxy. And my boss, who is sober, walked in the office, and I took it as a sign that I was doing the right thing that day, and I didn't tell him I wasn't drinking. And so what happens to me is I don't drink for 6 weeks, and I don't go to AA for 6 weeks, and I detox at home, and it was really, really, really bad, and I hope I never have to go through that again. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know that I am detoxing. I'm not sleeping at night. So if you're new and you're having trouble sleeping, I didn't sleep right for 4 months. I want you to know it will get better. Just give it some time and go to lots of meetings. I was sweating through my sheets. I was rubbing my feet on the fitted sheet. I remember that. And I was grabbing my mattress. And I just remember being sick. And I know my Aunt Donna was calling me every day from Hawaii, talking to me about her alcoholism, saying things to me like normal drinkers don't go into a blackout every time they drink. And I said, well, if you drink as much hard liquor as I did, you would. And I just had an answer for everything. And the only good thing that happened during that time, because what happened is when you take my solution of alcohol away from me and I don't have the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm in a really bad place. And all my problems and all that depression and all that loneliness and anxiety are amplified. And I want to kill myself more than ever. And I've got a plan. And because I don't want to drink again, but I don't want to be here anymore. And I had no hope. And the only good thing that happened during that time is I literally shrunk. My weight just kind of came off from not drinking, so I was drinking a lot, and I was getting that bloat. And and my boss noticed I looked different. And so Steve walked by the office. He goes, "What are you doing? Are you working out? Blah, blah, blah." And I was like, and I'm getting really depressed, and I'm thinking about my plan to die. And my coworker Gary, he came out of his office, and he said, "That's because Anne stopped drinking." And I was like, and I'm pretty crispy dry at that point. And I'm like, "Thanks, Gary." And so I thought Steve was going to come at me with literature and all this stuff, and he didn't. You know, he just, I don't know the time frame because I can't remember it. But eventually he came into my office and sat down and shut the door, and it was one alcoholic talking to another, and that's how my journey became to come here happened. And he said, "You know, Anne, this might be the only window in the cosmos open for you to get sober, and I suggest you walk through it." And I believed him because I had my Diet Coke and my Monday through Wednesday experiment, and I don't know why I got sober the day I did other than the grace of a loving God or higher power, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't me. And he goes, "You know, you have to go to Santa Barbara for work tomorrow. Why don't you listen to this CD?" And I don't know that it's an AA speaker. I was like, okay. So I put this CD in, and it was Sister Maurice from the Bronx. And she said, "Alcoholics Anonymous taught her to what thine own self be true really means, and to love thy neighbor as thyself, not instead of thyself." And for some reason, those things really struck a chord with me, and I laughed and I cried, and I didn't know I was identifying with an Alcoholics Anonymous speaker. But I brought the CD back to him the next day, and I said, "Steve, that was wonderful," because I felt a little better from hearing that. And I said, "Can I have another CD?" Because I thought, I'll stay sober by CD. I don't need to go to meetings. And he said, "Why don't you go to a meeting with my friend Lisa?" And I thought, oh, that sounds awful. And so I said yes, of course, because when your boss tells you to go to AA, you just say yes. And so I went to my first meeting at 15th and Balboa in Newport Beach. It was a beginner's meeting at a church there. I did not stand up and identify. I was observing, thank you very much. Everyone knew Lisa, and everyone kept coming to me asking me if I was new and trying to touch me and hug me, and I wanted to punch them, and I was really angry. And then they read chapter 5, and I'll never forget hearing chapter 5 for the first time, because I was like, oh my gosh, that's the steps. And I listened really closely, and I just thought it was amazing. And I try to be really quiet in a meeting anyway, you know, but I always think there could be someone in here that's never heard chapter 5, even though a lot of us have heard it many times. And then different people came up to the podium and started sharing, and I identified with what they were saying, and I kind of sunk down in my seat, and my hair went up on the back of my neck, and I thought, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. This is what's been wrong with me my whole life. And I was very, very grateful for about a split second. And then I thought, oh God, I'm an alcoholic. That means I have to go to these stupid meetings and do these stupid steps. I want to kill myself. And luckily, that was just on the inside. And I just went to another meeting with Lisa, and I went to another meeting with Lisa, and she kind of had me follow her around for 2 weeks. And eventually, I stood up and I said, "I'm Anne, I'm an alcoholic," and I cried. And I thought, now I got to really do something about this. And they said, "You know, you're living up in Lakewood. Why don't you go to Bellflower Big Book Group on Monday night and ask for Karen or Johnny?" I don't know Bellflower from any other meeting. I don't know who Karen and Johnny are. I walk into a meeting like this big, and I thought, oh my gosh, because I've been going to smaller meetings. And I said, and I'm like, "Does anyone have a last name, you know?" And I was like, "Does anyone know Karen or Johnny? You know, like, how are they going to know their name?" And they just pointed, and I walked up to Karen, and I said, "Hey, I'm Anne. Lisa sent me." And apparently Karen didn't know that, but she acted like she did. And she said, "Do you have a sponsor?" And I don't even know what a sponsor is. And I said, "No." She goes, "I'm going to be your sponsor." I said, "Okay." And she goes, "Go get in the greeting line." I said, "Okay," because I just thought that's what you do. And I stood in that greeting line for months. And she, at the end of that meeting, she said, "Call me at 7:30 in the morning." And I had been calling that woman at 7:30 in the morning for 11 years every day. And at one point, I think I was 4 or 5 years sober, I'm like, "Can I stop calling you every day? Like, I'm okay." And she said, "If you want to stop what's working, go ahead." I'm like, "Never mind." So anyway, she took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're outlined in the big book. I was really, really angry my first couple years of sobriety. I would stand in that greeting line, and some days I'd be really good, like, welcome to AA. And some days I would just be bawling, crying, like, welcome. And then I'd be really angry. I'm like, what's up? Move. Keep going. And I was just, and it was like that my first year. And all I can say to you, newcomer, is that I took the action despite how I felt. I went and got a commitment even though I didn't want to. I smiled and put my hand out to the newcomer even though I didn't want to. And I showed up at those meetings even though I didn't want to. And you know, I almost drank it 90 days. I was late because I worked late for my meeting, and I was in the left lane. I was going to go home and drink. And last minute, I went over three lanes of traffic and went right to the Arbor Road Tuesday night speaker meeting. And Dottie H. was the speaker, and she saved my life that night. I heard the last 15 minutes of her talk, and she said, how many of you guys like to work out? Nobody raised their hand. She goes, but you like the results, right? And she goes, that's what we're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're building our spiritual muscles, and it doesn't always feel good, but we like the results. I'm like, okay, I'm just building my spiritual muscles. Even though I want to die. And so, you know, I did my fifth step with my sponsor, and I delayed on the fourth step. Don't do that. I mean, it doesn't take that long. I just delayed. And, you know, I never wrote dishonesty in the last column, and I apparently am dishonest by omission, my sponsor pointed out. I didn't know that. And so what that looks like in my life and can look like in my life today if I don't practice this program is someone will hurt my feelings or they'll do something that upsets me and I don't tell the truth about how I'm feeling and I just step it. I'm like, no, that's okay. It's fine. Everything's fine. And then I build a resentment. And if I do that long enough, I'm going to drink again. I know that. And so my sponsors really helped me with just communicating in a compassionate way because I only know how to shut down or tell you to go to hell, basically. And I don't know how to just communicate. And so AA's really helped me with that, and my sponsors really helped me with that, and all the examples in the rooms. I was fortunate enough to make amends. I started sponsoring women at 6 months sober. Not my idea. And my sponsor just told me to say yes, and then she said, you just got to stay one step ahead of them. I said, okay. And what a gift. I love sponsoring women. I love, whether I'm officially sponsoring or not, but like helping other women. It's in our book. It's like, it's such a joy to see someone get this thing and to see their lives change. And sorry, I'm getting emotional because on January 7th, I got to hold one of my sponsee's hands as she took her last breath. And she had cancer, and that was right after my honeymoon. And so, but you know, it was so peaceful and beautiful, and she was at peace. And I'm so grateful I got to be there, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think I could have done that. I know I couldn't have done that before. So, anyway, that just kind of came out. So, I got to make amends, and my father and I were estranged from one another when I got sober, and my sponsor had me do my amends with him a little bit different. The rest of them I kind of did, hi, you know, let's make an appointment. I want to apologize for X, Y, and Z. I was wrong. I'd like to know what I can do to make that right. If there's anything else I'm forgetting, please let me know that too. My mom had a laundry list. But and I paid off the credit card debt and all that stuff. And that took time. It wasn't overnight. I didn't enjoy paying off the credit cards. But I'm glad it's over and I have good credit today. And you know, with my father, though, my sponsor said, why don't you call your dad and ask if you can start calling him once a week at a day and time convenient for him. And I'm like, oh, what an order. And so I didn't call. I didn't do that. And I sat on that direction, and I got in a lot of pain. And I'm either going to drink or I'm going to do the action, if that's my experience in AA. So I called my father one night at Target, and I just said, Dad, and he said, yeah, and I said, I was wondering if I could start calling you at a day and time convenient for you, and I couldn't talk right, and he said, I would love that. And so I started calling my dad on Saturdays, and I called him today, and we, over a very slow period of time, became very, very close. Like, very close. He texts me all the time. And so, and he lived in Oregon at the time, and he's a really great human being. And I started inviting myself up to Oregon, where he was living at the time, for Thanksgiving weekend, because I figured it's 4 days total, two are travel days, it's quick. And, you know, my dad and I bonded over college rival football games, and we'd sit in these big easy chairs and watch football all day and order pizza, and we're very close. And it's been years now, but my dad, I thought I was going to lose my dad. I got to be a daughter because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wouldn't have even known he was going through what he was going through. had I not made those amends. And he came through the other side. It took about 4 years. And I'm so grateful that he's in my life, and he walked me down the aisle on December 30th. So it was pretty amazing. Anyway, okay, now what? So I told you about those pregnancies as a teenager. I was very ashamed of those things. And my friend Sarah lives in Kansas City, Missouri, and she kept asking me to come visit her. And I was like, I don't want to go to Missouri on my vacation. And I mean, I didn't say that to her, but I was thinking it. And then I eventually said, sure. And I said, your birthday's Memorial Day weekend. I'll come out there. And so right before I was going to go out there, she said, can I ask you a question? And she has two boys, Ryan and Evan. She's like, would you be Evan's godmother? We're going to have him baptized when you're out here. I said, that would be an honor and a privilege. And for some reason, that just made my heart break open. I started crying all the time. I get on an airline I've never been on before. It's Frontier Airlines, and they have animals on the wing. And this one had a mother and a baby cheetah, Lola and Max. I was like, ah! And I go in there, and Evan's just, he was 2 years old, and he's hilarious. He's older now. But I didn't know that this is going to be in store for me, but I was in the church holding this baby, and he's getting baptized, and it's my 7-year AA birthday that day. And I was just crying. And it was just an amazing experience. And it was about him. It wasn't about me, but it was just from suiting up and showing up and answering the phone and doing this program. Things happen in your life. Like, when you show up for life, life happens. And I ended up meeting my husband in an AA meeting, I don't know, almost 4 years ago now. This April will be 4 years ago. I had to speak on steps 4 and 5, and there's a question and answer period at that meeting, and he raised his hand and said, you know, the book talks about, the 12 and 12 talks about forming a true partnership. How are your relationships today? And I know I said something smart aleck, like, oh, if you're asking if I have a boyfriend, the answer is no. And I'm like, blah, blah. And then I answered it seriously. And, you know, because I didn't date for my first 8 years of sobriety. That was not what I came here for. I came here to get sober, and it wasn't my strong suit in my life, and so I just figured I was going to be like an AA nun and help women the rest of my life, and I was actually very cool with that and very much at peace with that. I was a very happy person. I wasn't looking for anything, and the secretary of that meeting, who's a friend of mine, played matchmaker, and I gave my phone number out, and then my now husband wasn't going to call me, and his sponsor egged him on, and so that's how that started, long distance for 2 years, and then I moved to San Diego a couple years ago, and, you know, we got married, and that was recent, and we're expecting our first child, so, which was on purpose, a lot has happened in the last few months, so I'm really excited. But you know, the main thing is like in our home, AA comes first. We don't go to any of the same meetings. We used to go to one, but now we don't. And that's fine. It doesn't really matter. But the main thing is I have to put my relationship with my higher power first and foremost every day. I do the same thing I did when I got sober that I do today. I hit my knees in the morning. I thank God for the rest. I ask to be sober and useful that day. I write a gratitude list every day. I read the 24-hour book. I read the daily reflections. And then someone gave me this other book that I started reading. And I write something that I get out of those readings in my gratitude list. I call my sponsor at 7:30. I get calls from 5 to 7 women a day. I go to regular meetings. I have commitments in almost all of my meetings except my book study, but I'm committed to going there. And, and you know, when I do the deal, and when I do this, when I maintain a fit spiritual condition, I have a really good life and I'm really at peace. And when I don't, I don't. And about 6 years sober, I had the flu and I missed a bunch of meetings. Well, maybe like 10 days worth. And people from my home group kept calling me saying, how are you? How are you? Are you okay? How are you? And I got really mad by that. And I said, if I get one more loaded how are you phone call, I'm going to go to Champagne Brunch, and then I'm going to Verizon, and I'm changing my cell phone number, and nobody will ever find me again. And then I had, thank goodness for all that prayer and meditation and all those meetings, because a little voice inside of me said, are you really going to throw away 6 years of sobriety? Your head is thicker than your body and you need a meeting. And I went to this 7:30 a.m. attitude adjustment meeting. I said, don't touch me. I was all sweaty. And it saved my life. You know, and it just showed me that, and I've heard it said by other speakers, I have alcoholism, not alcoholism. And it's really important for me to treat this on a regular basis. Like every day, not regular, every day I have to do this. And so if you're new, I have found in my experiences, it was very beneficial to get a sponsor because they'd have the experience going through the steps and help you go through the steps. I would strongly recommend doing the steps. It completely changed my life. It changed how I react to things. It changes my attitude. I feel peaceful most of the time. I'm not perfect, but most of the time, until I like sit in my car sometimes. But I'm good, you know, and that's a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new, I just want to say welcome, and I hope that you find what I have found, and that's a really good life and a lot of peace. Thanks.